Interview with W.K. Keller in Portland.
I recall one time that Dr. Bunnell and I were appearing before the Appropriations Committee of the legislature. This was while I was Commissioner of Education.
Just hold it about like you had it. Not like that. That's pointed toward you. That's good. Okay.
We were appearing before the Appropriations Committee of either the House or the Senate. I don't recall now. But the question of the disposition of the Yak, which had been imported to Alaska with the idea of developing a combination beef and milk herd at the university, it seems that they had been turned over to the university by the U.S. Department of Agriculture at that time, and some of the legislators were questioning the expenditure of money for an experiment of that purpose. I recall that the judge was very evasive. He wouldn't make any decision as to what would happen to this experiment under the university. Finally, one of the legislators said, "Well, what I'm trying to get at, Judge, is if that bull yak of yours up there would die, what would you do with him? Or what would you do then?" And the judge chuckled and said, "Well, I guess I'd take him out and bury him." And that broke up the meeting. That was the last question that was asked.
That was logical enough. Well, you know, that yak experiment was one of just several that... He was always on the lookout for research, too, you know. The original study of the aurora, you know, were made back there when Fuller started taking pictures of the Northern Lights, remember? And but this yak experiment, that was pretty good. I wrote it up, you know, in one of my stories. Remember that one? I reprinted almost in its entirety one of Gasser's... little news stories or releases on the yak. Remember in the Alumnus not so long ago? Yeah. Because they were still eating of that stuff, you know. When the experiment ended, they ran out of money. Then they slaughtered the animals, and we Bunnell fed it to us in the kitchen. See? Cheap meat, you know. and I guess it was just tougher than nails, you know. Just real bad. at any rate, that was what that story was about. That. Well, today is the, 15th of October, 1970, and I'm talking in the apartment of Bill and Dorothy Keller, longtime Fairbanksians, in their apartment overlooking the city of Portland, Oregon. I'm on my way south. I'll be heading to San Francisco tomorrow, but I thought I'd stop off here today, and because the Kellers are longtime Fairbanksians and associated with the university and directly and indirectly. Thought I'd talk to him a little bit this afternoon. Now, I suppose in the history of education in Alaska, one of the most prominent names is that of W.K. Keller, and I have a lot of personal association because he was my first school superintendent when I taught in Anchorage. But he had been up there quite a long time before he ran into me, I'll say. So, Bill, I wonder if you'd tell us about how come you wound up as superintendent of schools there in Fairbanks, and I've even forgotten the year.
Yeah, just go ahead. Just hold it for about like that.
Well, actually, when I went to Fairbanks, something of an accident. I was employed as a, I just finished a master's degree at Washington State College and had accepted a position as high school principal down in Oregon. And in fact moved to Oregon. And a few days after arriving and renting the house down there, I was called from Boise, Idaho, by Mr. Alexander telling me there was a vacancy at Fairbanks and was I interested.
Who was this Alexander now?
He was a teacher's agency down in Boise. He had gotten this information evidently from L.D. Henderson, who was then Commissioner of Education for Alaska.
Oh, yeah. Now, what year was this?
This was 1921.
Oh, yeah.
And on the spur of the moment, I said yes. And I accepted the job.
Yeah.
And 2 hours afterwards, I probably was a little more hesitant than I was when I accepted it.
Yeah. When you found the fare, I suppose, to get up there.
Well, I borrowed enough money to get up there. So that.
How did you get in there? The railroad wasn't finished yet, was it?
We know. We went to Seattle and made inquiry at the White Pass and Yukon office at the time and found that the way to get in there was to go by ship to Skagway and down across the pass to Whitehorse by the White Pass and Yukon Railroad and then down the river on the Yukon River boats. We went to Tanana and from Tanana and then back
changed
up.
Boats,
no, we didn't change boats. Oh, the old ship, river ship Tanana made the run.
It was big enough that it had the draft
it was able to do that and it made the run.
Did it go all the way up to Fairbanks?
Went clear to Fairbanks,
oh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, the dock side was pretty a busy place then. In
those days. Yes. That was the important shipping at that time.
Yeah.
The docks were right in front of the old NC Company store.
Yeah. Well, what was the condition of the school? How long had the school been going by that time? Do you recall offhand?
I don't recall just what year the school was established up there, but it must have been as early as 1905 or 1906.
Yeah. And how many teachers about were there in the school then?
There were nine.
Nine? In the whole school?
Yes, that was for the grades and the high school.
Now, you were the superintendent?
I was superintendent.
Did you teach in addition?
Oh, yes. I taught physics and mathematics.
Yeah.
Taught some math, but I taught physics.
Yeah.
That was the regular
subject. I suppose there are still some of the students that were in school still around up there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Quite a few of them, as a matter of fact, are still around Fairbanks.
Yeah.
I'd have to do a little thinking
now,
back 50 years to figure them out, but they're still there.
Well, we don't want to tell the identify names, especially the girls, you know. They get a little bit they don't like that too much. But was the building up there on 9th and Cushman?
9th and Cushman. There's a frame building at 9th and Cushman.
Yeah. And that stayed, I think, until 32. I think it burned down about 1932. Or
burned down in 32 or 33, something of the sort.
Yeah.
I note here the first graduating class in the high school was 1913.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, Dorothy, were you a student then too?
Yes, I was.
Well, the town, of course, would kind of close in during the winter and fold up, and then wait the mining in the summer. Is that
the Alaska Railroad was in process of construction, but it hadn't been built across the pass yet. It was they were constructing from both ends.
Yeah,
but the broad pass country was still. Well, it was possible to take a horse team between steel if you wanted to, but it was they were still bringing the mail in from Valdez over the trail. And the stages were still running from Fairbanks to Valdez.
Yeah.
We could have gone in by Fairbanks to Valdez and the stage, but it was a better way around.
Yeah.
Most of the traffic at that time went by way of Dawson.
Yeah. Well, then, which year did you did Ben Ileson enter the picture?
Ben Ileson came in the following year. I went in the fall of 21, and Ben Ileson came in the fall of 22.
How did you happen to get hold of Ben as a teacher?
Well, Ben was looking for a job, and we were looking for teacher. And he had written up, and Dan Sutherland in Congress, he had worked in Congress as a page boy, as I recall. And he had talked with Dan Sutherland, and Dan Sutherland had dropped a note up also saying that he understood Eielson was interested, and Eielson wrote to me, and he looked like somebody that might fit, and so we just brought him up.
Yeah. Now, did he teach 1 or 2 years?
He taught with me. He taught 1 year. I left in 23 to go to Juneau as superintendent, and Ben taught 1 year with me. And as I recall, it's a long time ago, but as I recall, he had his Jenny came in that summer, and in the fall he was flying the mail. So I couldn't say right offhand whether he taught 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he didn't. That he taught.
Not any longer.
Not longer than 2 years, I think.
What was the basketball? Didn't you mention once that Ben played, and you played basketball?
Oh yes, we started basketball teams in the high school in the winter of 21, and Ike Taylor and Charlie Fowler and Earl Borland and some of the rest of us played around and with the kids to give them some exercise and competition. And then the next year when Ben came in, we had a full team. Ike Taylor, Charlie Fowler, Ben Eielson, and Earl Borland, and I made up the city team. And
you were the city team?
We were the city team,
oh,
and we used to play the kids.
I see.
But Ben was the coach of the high school team as well. He coached the high school team and played with us on the city team.
Yeah.
We played down at what they call the Old Armory, which was downtown. It had about a 10-foot ceiling, something of the sort, and it was certainly not a regulation court, but it gave them a lot of exercise.
What streets approximately was that?
That was about 6, must have been about, about two streets east of Cushman, or 3 streets east of Cushman, and about 6, somewhere in there, the Old Armory building. I don't know whatever happened.
But we've had so many fires from time to time, and I wouldn't be surprised that it was lost in one of them.
Could well have been.
Well, you were there then when the college started. Do you, as superintendent of schools there in town, what was your information or feedback about the college out on the hill there?
Well, people of Fairbanks, of course, thought that it was an excellent project, so forth. And I personally thought that it was an excellent project to get started.
Yeah.
Of course, it didn't open until 22. I was there 1 year while it was in operation.
Did you have any personal dealings with, now I'll throw a fast one at you, Thompson, W.F. Thompson? The newspaper, maybe?
Not
any direct contact.
No, I had, I only had one problem, one contact, really, I think, with him that would never be worth recording. I knew him quite well, but I recall quite well that one of the boys out on the creek had never been to school and was moving to Fairbanks. And he was about 12, 13, 14 years old.
This is one of the Thompsons?
No, this is one of the, he was a son of one of the miners out on the creek.
Oh, I see.
And, what was his name? I'll think of it in a minute. He was from Shaw Creek. But he had never been in school, and his mother brought him up to school and wanted to enroll him. And of course, here was the question: the boy had never been in school. And he'd never been in a town, as a matter of fact. And what should we do with him?
Yeah.
So I reached for the phone and called W.F. Thompson, and I asked him if he had any job as newsboys. And W.F. said he did. I told him the story, and he said he knew something of it. of the situation out mm-hmm. there at Shaw Creek and send the boy down and give him a job. Mm-hmm. So then I told her to let him work on as newsboy on the paper first for about a month before she enrolled him in school to get him used to kids and used to town life and so forth. And so he did. He became a news carrier, and about 3 weeks or a month later, he came up and enrolled mm-hmm. in school. Later on, he became business manager, incidentally, of the Fairbanks News Miner, and was later in politics and was down in Juneau as one of the main political figures down there. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that I can't just recall his name right now, but
Well, speaking of politics, you probably knew Bob Bartlett and Vitey about that time.
Were they
young people about town?
They were both in high school when I was there.
Both
they graduated from high school while I was there.
Mm-hmm. Vitey was at the Pioneer Convention here the other day.
Oh, she was?
Yeah, looks good. Fine. You know. She's living back in Fairbanks now, you know. Living with Dorothy Reedy.
Oh.
Yeah, I understand she's going to be working out at the university archives, too. All of Bob's papers are out there, mm-hmm. see? And the archives are really something to see. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. We've got not only his, but we've got Greening's papers, and we got all of Dan Sutherland's stuff now.
Good.
And there's lots of stuff coming in, you know, that's really valuable history.
It's too bad you didn't get the Wickersham Library, too.
Yeah, it's too bad, but I was glad we got a copy of that diary I was telling you about.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
right.
That's worth it.
Well, do you have any personal recollections of Bunnell? Starting the college or the election or anything that you might think would be of interest?
Well, we lived right close to Dr. Bunnell and I knew him quite well. One thing that always impressed me about Dr. Bunnell was that I figured he was about 6 months ahead of everybody else mm-hmm. on any problem that would come up. Anything, it didn't make any difference. He had apparently just already approached it and thought it through and was way out yonder where the rest of us were back here. Apparently a tremendous vision that most of the rest of us didn't.
He had, I think, that. I think someone was saying the other day, too, that he is a man of tremendous work appetite, let's say, hard worker.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He was working from early morning. They tell me he'd walk out to the college, you know, in the early days to get there before the kids did, and he'd put in a full day, and then he'd be working at night, too. Tremendous energy that he'd pour into whatever he was doing.
Oh, yeah, he was always working at something on the college.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to do more of yourself now. Why don't you continue? You went to Juneau then in 23.
I went to Juneau in 1923.
Yeah.
And I stayed there until 33 as superintendent and as commissioner of education.
Yeah,
33
now,
I went back to Anchorage.
I'm a little hazy now. They were switching things back and forth. The first commissioner was Henderson.
That's right.
And then Leo Brewer took
Leo
over.
Leo Brewer took over. He was there for 18 months.
Yeah. And then they had a territorial board, didn't they?
They had a territorial board of education, but politically the thing was in a
state of flux.
I was the first elected commissioner. They changed the law from the appointed commissioner of education to an elected commissioner of education.
I didn't know that. I thought that came later.
No.
It was 1930 then?
That was in 1930 that they changed that. It would have been 1930 that they changed that, because Brewer was the last appointed commissioner. He followed Henderson.
Yeah.
And then I was elected and followed Brewer.
Right.
And then I served the 2 years.
Yeah.
And then Carnes was elected and he followed me.
Yeah.
And he stayed on until about 42 or 43, somewhere in there.
Did you read where he died last month?
Someone told
about
us.
About 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, someone told us the other day.
6 weeks ago, yeah.
Someone told us the other day he died.
Yeah. Way up in his 80s, too.
Yeah, he was pretty well along.
Yeah. Well, I remember that time because it was I was still in high school, and I remember the idea, and I didn't know whether that was such a good idea or not. It seemed a little strange to have the Commissioner of Education, you along with the auditor and the attorney general, and that's about all. There weren't many state offices.
Well, there was a wave of let's have more democracy at that time.
Yeah.
And so they made those offices elective instead of...
just the legislature, then those certain offices, the auditor and the attorney general, the treasurer,
the attorney general, and the commissioner of education made up four.
Yeah.
They were the four principal offices.
Yeah.
Now, that was probably prompted from the fact that the governor was appointed by the federal officials. And they were trying to counter that influence with their own elected officials.
Yeah.
And so they made all these offices elected. I didn't approve of it myself in the election of a commissioner of education. I never entered into the others.
By way of contrast, what was the salary of those jobs at that time?
Commissioner of education was paid $5,000 a year.
That was pretty high.
That was considered high pay at that time.
Yeah.
The treasurer drew a little more than that because he had certain other functions given to him, but I think the attorney general and the auditor both drew the same pay, $5,000 a year. I think we all drew $5,000, excepting Walstein Smith, who was treasurer, and he was secretary of the Territorial Banking Board and had some other financial things, so they paid him a little extra, $500-$600 a year.
Now, Tony Carnes ran as a Democrat, as I recall.
That's right.
And you ran on the Republican ticket.
That's right.
And of course, that was 1932, and that was a Democratic landslide.
I was elected. I beat Carnes in 30. And 2 years later, he beat me. That is, we ran two races.
I didn't know he was a candidate in 30.
In 30,
also.
And in 32, then Carnes defeated me. That was the year of a big Republican landslide, if you recall.
Yeah.
A big Democratic landslide, if you recall.
Yeah, everybody was Democratic, thank you.
No, sir.
Did that job remain in elective for very
long?
No.
Carnes was. Was instrumental, I think, in having it changed back to an appointive position.
Yeah.
And I think it was immediately returned to appointive position, and Carnes was appointed then by the board from then on, as long as he served.
Yeah, he served, maybe 10 years or so, huh?
Sometime in 40, about 10 years.
But he was succeeded by Jim Ryan.
Jim Ryan,
yeah. So that traces that through pretty well, all right. Now, you then went over to Anchorage.
I went from Juneau, from the Commissioner of Education, I went to Anchorage as superintendent.
Yeah. Anchorage at the time was considered a pretty affluent school system, too.
Anchorage, the town of Anchorage, of course, was one of the most promising economically. It had probably the best economic promise of any of the cities at the time. It was a feeder for the railroad, and also for the West, the airplanes were beginning to come in, and it was becoming the feeder point for the western part of Alaska. And I always rated Anchorage as being the key location in the territory for economic expansion. The school system consisted of about 17 or 18 teachers, don't remember exactly. Probably had about 400 students, and I stayed there 6 years. It had about 900 and some when I left, so it was showing steady, Anchorage in the area was showing steady growth.
I think when when you made that fatal mistake of hiring me, remember that good year, 1937?
I was trying to think the other day whether it was 37 or 38.
37, and I remember I sent out, I think I was going to flood the market. I sent out 5 applications.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, boy, this will get them. They'll grab me up fast, you know. Well, you sent me back, and I never forgave you for this, you know, a whole bunch of form letters, you know, fill out the blanks and send them in.
Probably did, yeah.
And did I ever tell you this story?
No.
I better tell it to you. And at the head of the thing, in bold-faced type, it says, unless you have a master's degree and 5 years' experience, please don't apply for our high school.
Did I ever say that?
Yeah. No, this was on the print.
Oh, that was in the print.
And if you do not have a bachelor's degree and 3 years' experience, please don't apply to our elementary school. Well, this, I just sent in my application, see, and then I got this back on the next train. And boy, you should have seen me at the scene. And I took these papers and I went into Jim Ryan, you know, waving them in the air, you know. And I says, boy, I've seen everything now, Jim. Look, because Jim and I were good friends, you know. We've been acting in plays together and all this kind of thing. And I said, look at this confounded Keller down there, what he sent. This is the reply I get to my application. How do you suppose I'm supposed to get experience if nobody will hire me? And I was hitting the roof and really putting on a good show. And Ryan, you know, he's chuckling all the time because I was putting on a good act too, you know. Oh, calm down, calm down, calm down. Well, I said, I'm not going to fill out all this junk if he says he doesn't want it, you know. Fill it out, he says, fill it out. He says, if it'll make you feel any better, I'll write him a letter and tell him you're a good boy. So with somewhat reluctance, I filled out the darn things, even though I didn't have the specified qualifications.
Well, I don't recall that, but I can understand that we were in a period of depression, and teachers were a dime a dozen, and we were getting dozens and dozens of applications. I tell you how I did on some of these. I had talked with Dr. Bunnell, as a matter of fact, about teacher training and so forth at an earlier stage, and told him that one of the best opportunities the university had was the preparation of teachers for the territory. Yeah. And that I thought the territorial schools would take all the teachers they could prepare.
Yeah.
And so it was our intention to employ Alaskans in the school.
Yeah.
Now, I don't remember the specific details, but I know that when Vi O'Neill was employed, I simply called Lola Tilley and said, send us a good home ec teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I have Vi Lundell, and I said, send her down.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with McDonald when we hired
Winifred
yeah. McDonald, yeah. You see. All I did was to call Lola Tilley and say, we've got a job here for a home ec teacher, send us a good one.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt at all that I did the same thing with Ryan, probably with you, that I just probably called Ryan and said, we got a job down here, pick us a good man.
Well,
because we began to put University Alaska people into the anchored schools at that time.
And it was a good thing, too, because you broke the ice.
Oh, yeah.
Because
well,
Anchorage was pretty well respected.
We intended to. That was the point. We wanted to break through. Yeah. We wanted to break this cycle that I thought was kind of an invidious thing of always sending to Seattle or Chicago or somewhere to bring in a teacher when there were plenty of people looking for jobs up there.
Don't forget when you brought Gertrude down, Miss Alaska,
when we brought Gertrude Schottfeldt down, we were in need of a teacher at the time, and as a matter of fact, I called Lola, and Lola had mentioned Gertrude Schottfeldt, and she just happened to be Miss Alaska at that time, Miss University. So I called Lola back, I think, the night that we had the word, and said, look, she's the gal that we want down here. We can stand a little good looks along with teaching ability. And so all four of you came down on the basis probably of phone calls.
You know, in my scrapbook, I have the letter that you wrote me. And it's one of two letters I may reproduce in the book. The first letter is the one from Bunnell telling me to come to college, you see. But the one from you I particularly prized because it was addressed, Dear Bill. And I thought this was delightful. I didn't know him personally, except he knew who I was.
And
I knew who he was through our years in Juneau and Douglas, you see.
Yeah.
But he said, Dear Bill, we don't have a high school vacancy, you say, because not much turnover in that. Mm-hmm. And Marie Ridings, of course, was holding there. But you said that Mr. Mendenhall, I think, one of your seventh grade teachers, was had asked for a leave, and there would be a vacancy there, and it was mine if I wanted it. And here it was, 1 week after I sent in the application, and I thought, boy, this fellow is moving fast. My fame is spread in a hurry. I don't know.
So you must be good, huh?
Well, I especially appreciated the P.S. That you had in handwriting. The salary will be $155 a month for 9.5 months, for a total of $1,472.50. And your initials. I'm going to try and reproduce them.
I think, Bill, that I always was kind of interested in this angle of it. You know, I was superintendent of schools in Juneau, and you was under the MVI, for example, as students in Douglas. Nobody ever heard any good words about each other. And so when there was when you got away from this situation, you know, and the air cleared a little bit, why everybody found that everybody was kind of human after all.
Pretty human. Oh, that Juno Douglas rivalry.
Oh,
something.
Boy, that was really something.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, you could feel the tension in the air.
Oh, yeah, bet you.
When he'd come over to a basketball game and walk down the floor, you know, I didn't have
my guards, but they'd have some Secret Service people these days.
Yeah, that was really fun days.
I remember. We're not recording at the moment, are we?
Yeah, we're recording.
Well, we are. Well, that's all.
I don't think we should lose these cards.
I remember when Mrs. O'Neill, Vi Lundell, came down.
You can turn it off if you want.
No, that's okay. When Vi Lundell came down, you know, I had called Lola Tilly, and she said she had Vi, and she was from Douglas, and I said, send her down. And so Vi came down, and when school started, we have our teachers' meetings, with which you were familiar. And after the teachers' meeting, Vi came into the office. I went on into the office, and Vi came into the office. In fact, I think I said I wanted to see her for a moment. And so she came into the office, and I told her that she'd been selected because we thought she was going to be pretty good and that she was an expert in her field, and nobody around the institution was an expert but her, and what she said was law in her department, and that's the way it was going to be. And anything that she would say or anything that she would do, why, that was the way it was going to be. And I recall that she sat and looked at me for a minute or two.
Yeah.
And could hardly believe this, you know, from this guy.
This change of heart, so to speak. Of course, remember, she also had to coach basketball.
Oh, that's right. She was a basketball coach, too. That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. Well, now, then you, I recall, then you resigned in Anchorage in 39.
I was 39. I was offered the superintendency in Fairbanks in 37 again. And in fact, I'm 37. And I went to Fairbanks and talked with the board. Yeah. They wanted and offered to have me come back up there. But I turned the job down because I had some other things planned at the time, and one of them was I was considering buying the gas in a hotel in Juneau and going into the hotel
business. Yeah, you told me that once.
And then I turned that down after I thought it over a while and stayed in Anchorage as superintendent for a couple more years.
Yeah. Then you, when did you get your doctorate now?
I resigned from Anchorage, went out and completed my doctor's degree.
Yeah, Washington State was it?
Well, I did it the combination of Columbia University and Washington State.
Yeah.
I took the degree from Washington State because I had residence requirement there, but I think actually most of my work was done with Dr. Engelhardt at Columbia University, and then they transferred the credits for me to Dr. Stone, who was my major prof at Washington State. They worked out an arrangement whereby I would take the degree at Washington State.
You didn't take any superintendencies out in the States, did you?
Yes, I was The 1 year in New Jersey.
What were you?
I was what is called a supervising principal at Horton, New Jersey.
Oh,
uh-huh. That was about 45, 50 miles out of New York City.
Uh-huh.
That was sort of a fill-in sort of a deal while I was doing some work, research work at Columbia. Mm-hmm. I did about a year's work, research work on the what they would call public housing at this time. They were, it was just coming into vogue at the time.
Yeah.
And they needed a study on what was happening on this public housing business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent about a year on that with Dr. Engelhardt as the leading mm-hmm. prof. Mm-hmm. Wrote about a 200-page report on it. And just then the war came on, and the report was to be published in book form, but the government froze all the resources, paper and everything else at that time, and so I suppose it's still kicking around the library back in Columbia in typewritten form.
The topic, you say, was on housing?
On the public housing, yeah.
Well,
how they were replacing the five-story slums back there with 13 or 15-story slums is very dramatic.
Yeah. Well, then you went to work for the Bureau of Indian Affairs for what?
I went to work for the University of the State of New York first, and was supervisor of adult education up in New York State. My headquarters were at Syracuse University. I was there a relatively short time when Mr. Thompson from the Bureau of Indian Affairs down in Washington called me up one day and asked me whether I'd be interested in doing some special work for them out on the Pine Ridge Rosebud Country in Dakotas.
Oh.
As far as I was concerned, they could give the whole of Manhattan Island back to the Indians. So we lived in Syracuse for several months, really, but finally decided to come out to the Dakotas with, we stayed there one winter.
Yeah.
Came out in towards spring and was located on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. And I was there about a year, and they moved me down. I told Thompson at the time that I took the job that I would go with the Bureau of Indian Affairs if he would switch me down to the southwest when he had an opening.
Yeah.
That is down to Arizona, New Mexico country. And he agreed to that. I had known Thompson. He had been up in Alaska on business, Indian Affairs business before. But when he had a vacancy after about a year, 15 months, I think, I was on the Rosebud Pine Ridge Reservation, then they switched me down to Elko, Nevada, in charge of the Nevada, Utah, Arizona district. So I was with them for some little time, and then the war came on, and it seemed to me that a lot of this war effort was getting to be important.
Mm-hmm.
The Industrial Relations Council, a group of 200 employers up in Salt Lake City,
mm-hmm.
then were looking for a labor negotiator, statistician, and general jack of all trades that could work with the employers in labor matters.
Mm-hmm.
And they contacted me, and so I went up, had an interview with them, and went up to Salt Lake City then as secretary to the Industrial Relations Council.
Oh.
There's about practically all of the employers, the principal employers of the Utah, Southern Idaho, Nevada area were members of our group, and we handled their labor negotiations. The big companies like Kennecott and Anaconda had their own personnel staff that handled their relations. We worked with them in advisory capacity, but we handled the labor negotiations of all the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
we were kind of fortunate during the war period. We only had one strike in the 6 years that I was there. In all of our area, we only had one labor strike. And that was minor. It only involved about 20, 25 men. It lasted for about 60 days.
Well, that just about brought you back to Alaska then, didn't it?
Well, that just about brought me back. University was going through some reorganization up there, I think. And
I think we can say it. They were looking for a new president, and they were interviewing
several
potential candidates.
And they I was one of them that was contacted.
That's right.
They brought me back for the interview, and Dr. Patty was selected as president. And after Patty was selected president, he found that he had a vacancy in the education department, and he asked me to take over the education department, which I did.
Yeah.
So that brought me back to Alaska.
Yeah. Now, I'm trying to, this 53, this was.
That was 1953.
53, and then you stayed on until 60.
1960. Yeah. Yeah.
Your 7 years coincided with Patty's 7 years.
That's right.
Decided then to retire again.
That's right. At that time, I was reaching retirement age, and we had talked various times about doing some things that we never had an opportunity to do earlier, so we retired, and it was a good time to make a break. There was a new president coming in, probably new policies, new people, give him a chance.
Sure.
So,
of course, you do you recall when I was teaching for you in Anchorage that we made the preliminary steps on this teacher legislation?
Yes, I do very well.
Yeah. Now, you were president, at least the incumbent of president of the Alaska Education
That's
Association.
That's right. I served as president there. I was elected president of the Alaska Education Association I wouldn't want to say when, but it was some years earlier then. Due to discontinuance of the Alaska Teachers Institute, we never met again to re-elect officers, and so through a technicality I continued to hold on as president until we could elect a new president, which unfortunately was for 2 or 3 years perhaps, and then we conducted an election by mail. Now that election by mail had no justification in association rules, but it was time we had some new blood in the system
anyway.
So we called for an election by mail. It seemed to meet with the approval of the officers that we had, and so
I'm trying to remember, was it must have been 38 or so then that you asked me and who were the other girl? There were two elementary teachers that you put on the committee, Mrs. Oliver
would have been
and May Brady.
Probably May Brady.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I think the three of us. I think it was myself and May Brady and Esther Oliver. And we drew up these three rough preliminary sketches of what a law might be.
Yeah, that's right.
And you recall that that's when we got in our difficulty about 10-year bill, you know.
That's
they
right.
They called it a 10-year bill.
That's here. A.B. Phillips. We contacted A.B. Phillips, who was superintendent of schools in Juneau, and asked A.B. to carry the ball down there with the legislature, as you recall. And he did, and did a very good job, really. And, of course, that was when some people who didn't see just the same as we did thought that we were trying to freeze teachers into their jobs or something.
Permanently. Yeah, permanently. Forever.
And, in fact, we got a little publicity on it.
I think we did. I got the clippings yet. Make good reading.
I think I have some, too.
Yeah, yeah. But we did get through, though, the salary.
We did get
the minimum salary.
Now, it was interesting on the minimum salary, if you will recall. We had three bills introduced. One of them was teacher tenure. One was on teacher retirement. And the third one was the teacher's salary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in contacting A.B. Phillips, I made it quite clear that the point that we wanted was the salary bill.
Yeah.
And we would use the other two as bait, and we'd throw them away if necessary to compromise.
Yeah.
But we wanted the salary bill, and that's what A.B. got for us. They got the salary bill for the teachers.
That's right.
And we sacrificed the other two,
yeah.
But we got the salary bill too.
Yeah.
That was the person.
We thought it was a tremendous salary. Do you remember what the figures were?
Well, I judged that it was probably about a. I don't remember exactly.
I think it was a minimum of 1,800 Southeastern.
I was going to say I think it was 1,800 minimum, and then it went up step by step as you went north and went
Anchorage,
west.
I think it went up to 21, and maybe Fairbanks 23 or something.
Something
that
like that.
Right?
That sounds about right.
We thought that was pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, we were the young Turks at that time.
We were, but I wanted to get you down here because that skips my mind every once in a while, but I hear the younger Turks now, and I think, well, I went through some of that
sure,
myself.
Yeah. We went through it all the same way. But we were getting, I think the teachers were beginning to become a little politically wise at that time, and we used to go back, I recall, one year I practically had to get down on my knees with a school board and beg for a $50 increase. And when the board decided they weren't going to give a $50 increase to the teachers, but they gave me a $250 increase, I said, well, gentlemen, you take my $250 and divide it up amongst the teachers as far as it'll go. But they are the ones that need the money more than I do. And that kind of persuaded
embarrassed them a little,
and they said, oh, well, we'll give you the increase. So I think that year that was in Juneau, and I think we got $50 a year increase for the teachers at that time.
Yeah.
But we began to get a little politically wise, and we decided that it wouldn't do any harm. We had certain supporters from the 3rd Division that would help us out, and we knew about who they were, and I can't recall the names.
Well, I remember Ed Coffey was one
Ed Coffey was one of our main men. In fact, I think I did most of the work with Ed.
Yeah.
And so we prepared these three bills then, and it was pretty well understood, and Ed understood it too, that we were going to sacrifice two. We were going to compromise by sacrificing two and getting the one that we wanted. And we thought it was quite a success at the time that it went over, I know.
And you know, I think, of course, the retirement bill has been improved constantly right along, and it's quite a good bill now.
The unfortunate thing is it doesn't apply to those that retired 10 years ago.
Well, you see, you left us too soon. Well, you still get retirement, but you don't get other
We don't get the increases that come along.
No.
Well, we're not really hurting too much.
No, but then, yeah. Well, is there any other little interesting comments? This 45 minutes has got about, I suppose, maybe about 4 or 5 minutes left on it. Any general comments you'd like to make on, the educational scene of Alaska, or the historical aspects of Fairbanks, or the university, or anything that called to your mind?
Well, I think that it was interesting that through that period of time, say from 21 to, while I was superintendent of schools, from 21 on up to 40, the schools moved from pretty much of a pioneer system of schools, and I think largely through Henderson's basic work, into a well-developed and really an excellent school system. For example, the University of Washington sent a team up to Juneau to make a survey the year that I was Commissioner of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And they pronounced the Juneau schools, of which R.S. Raven was then superintendent,
mm-hmm.
as one of the best school systems on the Pacific Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't mention that because I had ever been connected with it or because Raven was ever connected with it, but because it represented the situation that you had at, say, Ketchikan and Wrangell and Petersburg and Cordova and Seward and Anchorage and Fairbanks, these key areas.
Yeah.
They were all good school systems compared to stateside school systems. I mean, they were registered and get.
Well, I always felt that way, that we, after all, we had quite, they could be quite selective in who they chose to
that's
be
right.
teachers.
That's right.